Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Hashtag Tim and Friends. Of course, I go by the name of the kid. Famous. You and they are tuned in to the Tim and Friends show. Hello, education, entertainment, coast to coast. Ball it up, call it entertainment. Let's get this started. Uncle Tim, let's start this show in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Wait a second here. Andy Dalton to the Bears? What is going on? That's their starter? Thought it was Russell Wilson that you were aiming for. Andy, sorry, I digress. $10 million deal with a chance to earn another $3 million in incentives. Okay. Chicago Bears football coming at you. Episode 7. Tim and Friends coming at you. I'm Tim McAuliffe coming to you live from downtown Toronto on Sportsnet. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360, all of the Sportsnets, basically, except for one. If you're looking to PVR the show, do me a favor, do it on Sportsnet 360. That's where you get the entire 2 hours almost every day. Like today, we are on Sportsnet for an hour and a half before Hockey Central takes over. 6:30 Eastern, Bruins and Penguins follow live at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific. No matter 90 or 120 minutes, we've got you covered like Darrell Revis in his prime. Coming up on today's show, Flames captain Mark Giordano coming off their third straight win under Daryl Sutter will drop by in about an hour's time. And speaking of hockey, Anthony Stewart of the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada will co-host the second hour with me. That should be fun. Also stopping by, head coach of the women's national basketball team, Lisa Tomaitis. We will talk about the fourth-ranked team in the world. Yeah, that's right. It's our Canadian women. Fourth. World. They have some obstacles in their way before they head to the Olympics in Tokyo. And the Tuesday roundtable will be assembled. Yes, we're talking baseball in the first hour. In fact, about 15 minutes from now, Joe Siddle and the Bens will join me. Ben Nicholson-Smith and Ben Wagner. Jays in action again today. Vladdy Rakin. What's going on here? Dropped 50 pounds and he's batting 500 in the spring? Well, 529 to be exact. What in the good name of Carlos Delgado are we in store for this year? We will get you everything you need to know about the Bluebirds heading into the season. In fact, just 16 days away from opening day against the New York Yankees. And that includes a chat on a brand spanking new extension for their manager, Charlie Montoyo, which was announced earlier today. Great day to have the roundtable, but to quote my guy, Christopher Wallace.
First things first.
You ever hear that cheesy joke about the weather wherever the hell you live in Canada? It goes something like this. Hey, if you don't like the weather here in insert town or city, just wait a half an hour. It'll change. Feels like the same joke could be used for the Scotia North Division. If you don't like the standings in the North, just wait a day. Monday night was another crazy one as Calgary, Montreal, and Vancouver all picked up 2 points apiece in a busy night in the North. And because of it, first through sixth is now separated by 10 points. That's the closest of any division in hockey. Second to sixth is separated by just 6 points. To put that in perspective, second to sixth in the Central is separated by 16 points. Second to sixth in the East, 14 points. The West Division is the only one anywhere close to the North when it comes to just how tight everything is. The standings are fun, depending, of course, where your team is day to day, but it's the rivalries. Every night, a rivalry game. And a rivalry game that means so much in the standings. It's those rivalries that make the North unlike anything we've seen, at least since they did away with the old school Norris or Smythe divisions.
This is what we all signed up for and we found out about an all-Canadian division.
Pass to Matthews, score! Holy mackerel! They win it in overtime!
You better be ready because here comes number 97.
Here's McDavid all the way, score!
Things are heating up in the Scotia North Division. Brent Ritchie with a pretty good shot on Kara.
The Battle of Alberta is back on.
Talk to any fan who cheers for a team in our home and native land, and they will tell you that their interest has been renewed by the all-Canadian matchups every night. It's been more fun than an empty water park at the age of 12. Man, I miss water parks. Jesse, you a water park guy?
I like water parks. A little gross, I think, the water sometimes, but we're not going to go there today.
Yeah, there's a lot of chlorine. Chlorine's there on purpose, though. Urine. Lots and lots of urine. But the water slides are fun. At least that's what the ratings are telling us about the North, that people are really interested. Our poll, which is coming up in a second, might tell you something different. It's too bad it can't happen beyond this year. Or can it?
There are at least a couple of the Canadian teams that are still hoping, you know, I would hope here that the North Division will live beyond this season. What a few influential voices for these Canadian teams told me is that they really want to see this with fans, and they feel like if it gets to next season, at some point fans will get reintroduced to this and they'll get to truly sense, you know, the impact it can have on their business and the excitement it can create in the country.
Mm-hmm. So you're telling me there's a chance, CJ? When this thing was Tim and Sid, we recognized that this was going to be fun, and it just might generate more ratings within Canada. So Sid was really pushing this. I jumped along. We asked Gary Bettman. We asked Bill Daly if there was a chance that it lasted beyond this year. That was shot down quicker than Cicero asking a girl to the grade 8 dance. I wonder why. No, I don't. But hang on for just a quick second here. What if we took out the ideas of travel and start time strictly from an interest point of view? Would you buy into one more year of the All-Canadian Division? And hear me out, okay? Over 82 games, do the Leafs really need the ratings bump? Probably not. The Habs? Man, no. But the rest of Canada? Perhaps. Does the league need Canadian teams to fill the buildings in the United States? Yes, some of them. Like when the Habs go to Florida, that helps the Panthers. It's a different form of revenue sharing. But in the final year before the pandemic thing hit, and listen to me here, within the division, it was just two home and two away. That's doable, isn't it? Just two home, two away, Canadian division for one more year? Let us know. Do you want this Canadian division to last, or should we just enjoy it while we can? Hit us up. At Tim and Friends, I'm still used to saying Sid, I'm sorry. At Tim and Friends on Twitter and the Gram. If they had to change the name more than just to and Friends, I would have been way better off, but I digress. Run the thing, we're the thing with the first and the thing.
First things first.
All right, our digital producer, Jesse Rubinoff, threw a couple questions out to the kids on Twitter and IG already. We bring Jesse into the conversation now. First off, Jesse, how are you? I went right into water slides and stuff. How are you?
I'm better than Chicago Bears fans appear to be on the socials. They are not happy about the Andy Dalton situation. 1 year, $10 million, but you got to think, maybe they're not done. That's not good enough.
Schefter on Twitter tweets it out, and there is 9,000 likes, and the comments are almost as high.
That's like ratioed.
Already getting ratioed just by announcing a deal on Twitter. It's unbelievable. We digress. What are the masses saying about, we know what they're saying about Andy Dalton to Chicago. Yeah. What are they saying about the Scotiabank or the Scotia North Division?
So we released a poll just over an hour ago asking a simple question. Do you want the NHL's North Division to continue next season? And I have to say, I'm a little bit surprised by the results here, Timmy. 66.7% say no. They do not want the NHL's North Division to continue into next season. A little bit surprised by that, but why don't we get into some of the replies and responses, picking apart the individual opinions?
I got one.
Yeah, what's that?
Steve just wrote in and said, why is this even a question? Stop.
Straight to the point.
Why is this even a question? Because I thought people were enjoying this, but apparently, judging by our poll, it's not.
It seems like you would think people would be excited to watch Canadian teams play every night. The intensity, the ratings say that. But it appears we are wrong about that, and the people do not want to see it.
No.
Maybe, you know what?
The ratings tell a story.
Maybe it's okay for the rest of this season, and then people will be done with it.
Well, I think people are saying, well, it's too much.
Right.
But that's not what we're suggesting.
No,
right?
We're not suggesting that
at all. What we're suggesting is in the old divisional format games, mm-hmm. you could pull this off without playing 9 or 10 times against the same team.
Absolutely.
And still, with people in the barn, be able to enjoy these rivalry games.
That is, I think, the biggest thing, is the fans are not in the building right now, and there will be something special when you have a packed crowd going nuts watching the Flames and Oilers in the arena. That's a lot different than what we have right now, I think.
Is that being lost in translation among the comments that you're getting right now?
I think so. Yeah. I don't think I've even seen one person talk about the fans, to be honest. So why don't we take a look at some of the answers?
Well, let me add that to the equation, kids.
There you go.
Okay, yes. Let me add that into it.
100%.
Because next year will be a little bit different. I'm not saying it'll be packed barns, but there will be probably people.
Hopefully. We need it. Sports needs it. Come on, baby.
Right.
We need it.
Yes.
All right. Rich says, hold on here.
Don't worry.
We're
going to
postpone that. Okay.
Fine.
Rich says, it's good as a one-off, but I'm looking forward to a regular NHL schedule whenever that happens. We got Nikon chiming in. Nope, but they should continue to do the multi-game structure for each series.
Well, that's what we're talking about.
Which is intriguing. I mean, it allows the rivalries to build over the course of 3 or 4 games.
Right.
That's a lot of fun.
If you're doing 2 home and 2 away.
Yeah.
That's one trip if you do that structure.
It's a mini playoff series within a series, right? Peace, love, and sports. Yes, they should keep the divisional alignment as is and go back to the balanced schedule.
Can you write your name? If your handle is Peace, Love, and Sports, even though it's part of my favorite line that I used to use in highlights, Love, Peace, and Hair Grease. However, can you just write your name like, hi, I'm Dave, and then throw the comment?
It's happy. Peace, Love, and Sports.
Yes, it is. So what? I was distracted by Peace, Love, and Sports. What did Peace, Love, and Sports say?
Peace, Love, and Sports said they should keep the divisional alignment as is and go back to the balanced schedule. So it's interesting.
So that's basically what we're saying.
Yeah, essentially. Jake the Brusque burner account. You like that handle a little bit better than Peace, Love, and Sports?
Not really.
No, plenty of awful games outweighed the rivalries. Too many bad teams in the division. I think a lot of people agree with that, obviously.
But how does that change? Hold on. Okay, so the Leafs and the Habs go back to the Atlantic, and the Sabres and the Sens are in that division. What the hell are you talking about?
Still a bad division.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think people are taking into account the idea of... I think they're just seeing the 56 games, 10 only against your division. You're not thinking about a Canadian division playing within the framework of this schedule before this pandemic thing hit.
Yeah, definitely. And I think you want to see how your team stacks up against other players over the course of a season.
Of course
I think that's a big thing, too. You want to see how the Leafs are going to play against MacKinnon and how the Oilers are going to play against when McDavid plays against Crosby. I think those types of rivalries is what people are missing right now.
Right. But you will get them back next year, even if you had I think some of this is being lost in translation a little bit, but I will agree with you. Like, I want to see, I never said this before in my life, I don't think.
Yeah.
I want to see Florida.
Yes.
Right? Like
they're sick.
Yeah, they're the Florida sick. Panthers are done grown up.
100%.
And I would like to see them come into my town.
Right.
I would like to see all these new, younger teams. The New York Islanders come to town.
Also great, yeah.
Right. So I think that's a part of the equation. We'll continue this conversation a little later on. We'll see if perhaps the poll will change. Maybe you can add to the thread it's new divisional matchups. It's not just divisional.
We'll address that. And the poll's only an hour and 13 minutes long, so we got plenty of time for things to change here. We're just getting started, Timmy.
Tyler says, and maybe I'm just throwing you under the bus here, Jesse. I think people may be a little confused about the question.
Okay. Well, why don't you back the truck up over me?
Yep.
I'll take it. It's all good. Coming at me.
It's missing the fan effect. Of course it's missing the fan effect. But if it comes back next year, never mind. Time for our first break. Still to come, Flames captain Mark Giordano will stop by. Sportsnet's Anthony Stewart will talk about that North Division. Perhaps he'll poo-poo it too. And I'm way off here. And after the break, 16 days away from opening day, so we have assembled the Jays roundtable. Ben Nicholson-Smith, Ben Wagner, Joey Siddle. To discuss Montoyo's extension, the Jays rotation, and Pearson's groin. Next on Tim and Friends.
Richie gets the right hand door. Chara back on his feet. And then he gets knocked out with a big right at the end. Brett Richie with a pretty good shot on Chara, who's down on the ice.
In is Miller. He deeks and he scores. G.T. Miller, as the Canucks waited for the proper moment, the perfect moment to set up the odd man rush.
Makes Pulido disappear.
Battles it off the post and bounces it home.
Wow! Are you kidding me?
I don't know if I've ever seen that, Marquise. An air ball technical free throw?
I don't think I ever have either, to be honest with you.
That is incredible. Look at the bench. Oh, my goodness. Watch your head.
It was once said the secret to happiness is low expectations. Well, Blue Jays fans, how happy are you? Are you happy with the new faces? Names like Springer and Simeon, Mats and Yates. We already know you're happy with the young faces. You know, the guys already on the first name basis, Vladdy and Bo, Cavan and Lourdes. Are you happy with the depth? There were questions coming into this year about the rotation. Sure, you got Ryu. Ray came back. Pearson throws fire behind them. Guys are starting to prove themselves. Mats has looked good. Roark looks fresh. Guys like Stripling, Thornton, and Hatch getting ready to go. And we can't forget about a couple of the youngsters making noise this spring, like Woods Richardson and Manoa. Are you happy with your catchers? Behind Danny Jansen, who at 25 years young is already feeling like a vet, there's competition at the backup spot, where Alejandro Kirk is already pushing Reese McGuire for the job and looking pretty good at the plate while doing it. So what are the expectations heading into 2021? Playoff contenders? AL champs? Not World Series champs.
And the Blue Jays win it! The Blue Jays are World Series champions!
What we know is this. The club is deep, we're talented, and they'll be exciting to watch, no matter where we're watching them play. So Jays fans, be happy, because at the very least, this team looks ready to put on a show. Ah, that time again, kids. And as is going to be the case most Tuesdays, the round table has been assembled here to talk Blue Jays baseball from Clearwater, Florida. Ben Wagner, Ben Nicholson-Smith, and Joe Siddle. Don't be afraid to talk over each other here, at least at the start. Hey, thank you for being friends, guys.
It's sunny here.
It's great
too,
to be
Ben
a friend. A warm friend on my end.
A little jealous of Ben, but yeah, thanks for having us.
We're all a little jealous of Ben. All right, let's start with Joe. And Charlie, news of the day, Charlie Montoyo has been extended through 2022. Mr. Siddle, we'll start with your thoughts on this announcement.
No surprise, really, for me, Tim. I was on that Zoom conference with Ross Atkins when he was asked the question. But if you look at what the Blue Jays have done, they went out and got a guy like Charlie, first-time big league manager. And I was in the understanding that this is a guy that they want to groom this young core moving forward. He's certainly doing that and more. He is working, as we hear all the time, in collaboration with everyone. This is not Charlie Montoyo's baseball team. It's not Ross Atkins' baseball team. It belongs to an awful lot of people, all of his coaching staff, the people behind the scenes, and so on and so on and so on. And Charlie has done a very good job steering that ship and managing what is going on in that clubhouse among his players and coaches.
Ben Nicholson-Smith, what has made Charlie the right fit in Toronto?
You know, I think it's just his positivity, and that's an easy thing to dismiss. I mean, especially we look at the numbers, and baseball is such a game of numbers. But you think about 2019, a season where the team was not good. They struggled a lot. They lost a lot of games, and they had some players that were borderline major leaguers. But he was still positive and helped some of those young players make it to the major leagues. And then last year, they didn't have a place to play. I mean, they were a homeless baseball team for basically the entire season, and yet they still made the playoffs. So that's not easy to stay positive in that environment, and Charlie did a good job of staying positive.
Yeah, without a doubt. Wagner, just tell us what the weather's like.
We're checking in at 27 degrees Celsius today. Yeah. A wind out of the west. It's blowing around 14, 15 miles an hour, and it's incredibly uncomfortable, as you can see.
Yeah, you seem really, really uncomfortable. It's funny how polarizing Charlie Montoyo seemed to be at the start of his tenure in Toronto. What do the fans not appreciate about what he brings to the table? Or not enough?
I think first and Well, I think first and foremost, he understands that you can get better at the major league level. And by and large, he's had a massive resume of player development and working in the minor leagues and also handling big time prospects. I mean, big time prospects when he was a first year manager all the way to when he was at AAA and developing the cream of the crop with the Tampa Bay Rays that then they were starting to shop off. Those guys got better when they went to the major leagues, and Charlie Montoyo was part of that, and he understood just how difficult it was to get better at that point in your career, but also the fact that how difficult it is if you've got a young core nucleus, whether it's on the diamond or a pitching staff, to ride the shuttle back and forth. And I think his demeanor day in and day out has helped him calm a clubhouse, but also then have the ripple effects that calm an organization for the greater good here. And now we're starting to see, yes, maybe a little bit more pressure within the organization, but the expectations are higher within the organization. And it starts first and foremost with the players that are casting it upon themselves.
It's just too bad that clear blue sky behind you is washing you out a little bit here, Ben. Let's continue on with the rotation, because I think heading into the spring, this was the part of the roster that had the most question marks. Ben's, how do you see it shaking down? We'll start with Nicholson Smith.
Well, at this point, Ross Stripling looks to be in that group. Steven Matz looks to be in that group. So they're going to be hoping for someone to really step up and take a step forward in that rotation, because, you know, Hyunjin Ryu, of course, an underrated pitcher, still a very talented pitcher. But beyond that, you do have a lot of question marks. So the injury that we heard about today to Nate Pearson, who had a setback as he tries to get back from a groin issue, is not good news for the Blue Jays. They're going to try to make the best of it and get him back to full health as soon as possible. But Pearson really is that one guy who had the most upside out of the entire group, and still does whenever he is able to come back.
Wagner, you see it the same way?
I think the top three are locks. You know, Hyunjin Ryu, Hyunjin Ryu is in there. You got Robbie Ray, and then you've got Steven Matz. Tanner Roark is paid to be a starting pitcher. I think they're going to give him every opportunity to pitch every fifth day as a member of this rotation. When you get to five, while Ross Stripling is in the conversation, you wonder what they have liked enough, or at least think in innings-wise, you can move to get Thomas Hatch or TJ Zoik part of this rotation. And then will they kind of jump in and replace a Ross Stripling or a Tanner Roark? For me, the younger guys have the better stuff right now. TJ Zoik, he's down in the zone. He's got the power sinker. Ross Atkins was raving about him earlier today. And then what we saw from Thomas Hatch and what he has continued to do with the Blue Jays not needing that fifth guy in the rotation at the start coming out of that series against the New York Yankees, they've got an extra start where they can continue to build him up. I think those two guys are more in the conversation than what the Blue Jays are tipping their hand on right now. We're just over 2 weeks to opening day.
Joe, it's interesting. Ben brought it up. The Nate Pearson re-aggravation of the groin. How tough is it for a kid in this spot to be kind of put on pause while he deals with this injury?
Well, it's very difficult, but more importantly is because this injury bug is following Nate Pearson, and It's getting to the point now where we're almost talking negatively about the young man because he just has not been on the pitching mound enough. And I think going into this winter and then preparing for this season, that's one place where maybe the Blue Jays should have stocked up a little bit more. Early on, we were looking at Nate Pearson as the number two starter in this Blue Jays rotation after Ryu. And that's an awful lot to put on a young man who hasn't been overly healthy, not to mention a number two starter in the American League East. That's not easy. Very inexperienced, and not only at the major league level, but from the minor league in his career too, because of the injuries. And of course, they really controlled his workload early on. Those all had the recipe for me that they needed, whether it's Jake Odorizzi or one of those secondary starters, they needed more stability in this rotation. And a lot of the names that Ben and Ben just referred to, I'm not as inspired as a lot of other people are about them. Ross Stripling can give you innings. Tanner Roark will give you innings. Robbie Ray and Steven Matz are going to be very intriguing for me. I think we know what Robbie Ray is. He's a guy that's going to walk a lot of guys, but he can also strike out a lot of guys. That, to me, leads to an inconsistent performance. That could be trouble. That could be going to the bullpen early quite often. With Matz, he's been very good in the past. I wouldn't put a whole lot of stock into anyone's 2020 season, especially a pitcher who didn't have his chance to prepare and get ready for a season as he normally does. These guys are creatures of habit. So I'll give him a pass there, and maybe he can rebound. But if he doesn't, this is a very thin rotation, and they think they were putting a lot on Nate Pearson, and I don't think that was fair.
Joe Siddle, Ben Nicholson-Smith, and Ben Wagner joining us here as the roundtable has been assembled to talk a little Blue Jays baseball on this Tuesday. Ben Nicholson-Smith, when can we start talking about seeing guys like Alek Manoah and Simeon Woods Richardson? I mean, we've been teased in the spring. They look good. I don't want to put too much pressure on them, but as Joe's talking about what's available and what isn't available, and Ben's talking about where we are on this rotation, my mind, and I'm sure a lot of fans' minds, can't help but wander to how good Manoah has looked and how good Simeon Woods Richardson has looked.
I think the time is now to talk about those guys. And I'm not saying they're considerations for the opening day roster, because they're going to go to the minor leagues and build up from there. But if you strike out seven Yankees in a row, I mean, I think that earns you a spot in the discussion at the very least. And Manoah looked great in his most recent outing. That's got to be so encouraging for him and for the Blue Jays. I think he's got a guy who could go to double A and then maybe force the issue from there. So, you know, of course, every team in baseball has prospects, and here in Toronto, we're focused on the Blue Jays. You know, it's not the Cincinnati Reds or the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'm sure they have good prospects, too, who are lighting up their Grapefruit League games and Cactus League games. But here in Toronto, Alek Manoah, Simeon Woods Richardson, very bright future for this team. They're showing that. And I think it's a real chance that Manoah, at least, could be in the majors this year.
Wagner, you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, I really like Alek Manoah. Maybe not at the start of the season, but depending on where the Blue Jays are overall in their bullpen situation later in the season, Alek Manoah could come in and be a two or three inning guy. And while, yes, he's put up impressive numbers, watching the stuff here at spring training for me with that fastball and slider combination, that's a big difference maker, because he's throwing it for strikes. He's never overmatched. He looks tremendous with his mound presence. This guy is ready to take the next step. He's already been polished and really pushed at a Power Five collegiate level at a really good program. So all those indicators are really good signs to me that you can push him a little bit through the organization, find out what he can do at the upper levels of the minor leagues, and then start to see if you can work him in to a bullpen scenario. I think it's a great way to break him in. I'd like to see more development from Simeon Woods Richardson, and then you get into that next wave of prospects to be excited about, just like Adam Klopfenstein, and then Eric Pardino should be back in the conversation as well, longest innings at some point this year. The next wave of prospects for the Blue Jays will happen on the mound. And that's really exciting to be talking about at this point.
Joe Siddle, I'm not going to lie. I looked at the lineup today and I smiled a little bit. It looked pretty nice. Is that something close to what we're going to see in 16 days for opening day, New York Yankees?
I don't think it was close, Tim. I think it was. When I saw it posted, for me, it's the opening day lineup. And even if it's against Gerrit Cole, I think you go with Randall Grichuk. He's got the veteran status over a Rowdy Tellez, despite the platoon advantage with Tellez DHing. But you put Grichuk in the outfield because it improves your defense. And even though Ryu's a ground ball pitcher, you want your best defense out there. You do not want Teoscar out there. He's your designated hitter. I think today was the opening day lineup for sure.
Springer, Simeon, Bichette, Hernandez, Guerrero. I made the joke earlier, BNS, like, drop 50 pounds in the offseason, hit 500 in spring training. Like, what are we seeing from Vladdy Jr. here? And could this be, I don't want to just say you lose the weight and you just start raking, but could this have something to do with the offseason regimen?
I think for sure it does. And Vladdy's birthday is today, by the way, 22 years old. Kind of crazy that he's still that young, right? Younger than Alek Manoah, who we're just talking about as a prospect. But, you know, Vladdy has all kinds of potential still. And I've predicted breakouts for him each of the last 2 years. I've been wrong both times, but still, I think this is a year that he can take a big step forward and be a guy who at least has an 850 OPS in the majors. And to me, the big question is his defense, because, you know, third base, that's not an easy position to play in the major leagues, even first base. It was a learning curve for him last year. He did not have command of that position, let alone any sort of, you know, expertise at it, really. It was a learning curve for him there. So to me, the question is defensively, but still some encouraging signs so far.
Because of COVID protocols, we can't exactly cover spring training the way we're normally used to covering it. But Wagner, you're down there. What have you seen from Vladimir Guerrero Jr., especially in and around what Ben's talking about, that defense, you know, taking ground balls and getting the work in at first or third or wherever he's at?
You know what? I see a much lighter Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You dropped the weight, yes. You should look maybe a little bit more nimble. Do you appear to be faster, or are you faster? For me, he looks like he's able to move just easier. He moves easier on the diamond, and we've seen him at third base a couple of times. He played first base again today and had the big 4-for-4 day with the 3 extra base hits. And because of that, I'm watching Vladimir Guerrero Jr. on those quick hands get through his zone faster. And it's a byproduct of some work that he's putting in, one, just physically overall, but then in repetition of game preparedness and working with the high-velocity pitching machine. Those hands are electric. We knew that when he was a rising prospect through the organization. Now we're seeing those hands just drive through the zone. And the telltale sign for me is the last week, his timing has started to come down, and we're seeing the hands through the zone. And he is hitting line drives with a lot of backspin. That is the telltale sign for me that Vladdy is coming around and Vladdy is falling into form to be ready for opening day.
All right, Benz, get your surprises ready. But I want to ask Joe Siddle, the catcher, about the catchers, because it's an interesting mix behind the plate. And speaking of electric hands, we've seen more from Alejandro Kirk just hitting the ball hard in spring. How do you see behind the plate shaking down, Joe?
Well, obviously, Danny Jansen is your number one. That's just the way it is for now until he loses that spot because there's nobody really challenging him. I do think Kirk is going to make this roster. And the reason I feel that way is because they brought him up last year. He handled himself pretty well. He certainly looks like he can handle the bat. And, oh, by the way, he's catching Robbie Ray a fair bit. So look for that in the future. I don't necessarily think that losing Reese McGuire, if they designate him and he gets claimed, is a huge loss. He may even just clear waivers and be back at the alternate site, so it won't be a big loss. But I think if you have Alejandro Kirk, I find it amazing that a kid played in the Florida State League and then now he's going to be a big leaguer because, and I asked Ross Adkins about this in the Zoom conference today, to skip two critical levels in the minor leagues of development, Double A and Triple A, when you face different levels of pitching, preparing you for ultimately getting to the big leagues and seeing the big boys on a regular basis. I think that's going to be very difficult for Kirk. I'm sure that nobody wants to see it, but most hitters are going to hit that little wall or that slump. How is he going to handle that? So those are the things I'll be watching out for because I think it's just an awful fast track for Kirk, almost an unfair one, to say the least. But now the flip side of that, on my other hand, is if he handles it well, Danny Jansen better watch out because he might work his way into the lineup. I'm talking about Kirk a little bit more often than Danny. If Danny doesn't pick up his socks and start swinging the bat.
All right, Benz, let's get to the surprises because I know a lot of Jays fans are wondering who they should be looking out for. We'll start with Nicholson Smith. Who do you think Jays fans need to keep an eye on?
Well, after today, I would say TJ Zoik. I mean, it's a guy that Ben mentioned before, but I mean, to have that sinker going up to 96 miles an hour, that's a good thing. He's been more of a kind of pitch to contact, limit the hard contact, not an overwhelming strikeout guy to this point in his career. But if he's up to 96, then maybe you miss a few more bats and you can get away with a few more misses.
All right, this is fun. Wagner, what do you think? Surprises.
All right, on the mound, I'm going to stick with Thomas Hatch. I think he's due for a big year and to be an impact guy with whatever role that he fills. On the diamond, though, a couple of interesting decisions that the Blue Jays have to make. Jonathan Davis, do you carry an extra outfielder with an outfield that already has 4 regulars in it? Do you add a veteran like Joe Panik? But I don't think you need that leadership this year. That's why I think the big surprise to make the opening day roster will be Braven Valera, somebody the Blue Jays protected on the 40-man roster throughout the offseason. They got him back to the United States, have kept him in camp, given a lot of opportunities. He's a switch hitter and very versatile, can play on the diamond, and he can move to the outfield where he's gotten a lot of reps. So Braven Valera is a very much under-the-radar player, but somebody I think the Blue Jays are putting a lot of stock in to be a role player, but not a needed role player for the Blue Jays as the season moves along.
All right, as we wrap this up, I'm going to stay with Wagner. How long do you think you're staying in Florida with the Jays?
I think I'm staying in Florida until June 1st. And whenever the first date that the Blue Jays can get to Buffalo, that will be the day.
Is that kind of the transitional hub, Ben Nicholson Smith, as you see it?
I mean, the Jays would love to be back in Toronto sooner. And if they can skip Buffalo, then maybe they find a way to do that. Obviously, a lot of variables involved. But, man, it would be great. You know, seeing Ben down there, it would be so awesome to have baseball back here in Toronto soon.
Oh, without a doubt. Joe, when do you think we will get to see? Are you optimistic that we will be watching the Toronto Blue Jays in the Rogers Center?
I'm optimistic, Tim, but like every other Canadian, can we really foresee it the way the vaccine is being dispersed? Let's cross our fingers. And my thing is, hopefully things don't get worse before they get better with all the news we keep hearing here in Canada. But let's just enjoy watching Major League Baseball wherever they play.
You know what? Without a doubt, one of the things that I have come to appreciate so much, listen, I love sports before all this started, but just to distract, just seeing Wagner standing where he's standing gives me a smile on my face. I want to thank all three of you for doing this, and hopefully throughout the year we can do the round table more often. Thank you very much, boys.
Right on, guys. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, boys. That was fun. Still to come, the Flames are 3-0 under Daryl Sutter. We'll talk to the captain, old friend of the show, Mark Giordano. But up next, they've been delayed by a year, but can the Canadian women's basketball team make a run to the podium in Tokyo? Head coach Lisa Tomaitis will join me after this on Tim and Friends. Basketball in Canada isn't just on the rise. Basketball in Canada has arrived, and this squad is good, real good. Wait. We're rolling the wrong highlights. Back it up.
Tough one off the glass. Tremendous effort on the boards, and Ray Gogakonwe has just come alive.
Chanwa, good up fake, driving in. Chanwa's been incredible tonight.
Gets to the middle, in the lane with a finger roll. Oh, my word, what a job on the glass. Nurse just knocks down the first three for her for the game.
That's better. Now, where were we? Right, this squad is good, real good. Ranked fourth in the world by FIBA, the Canadian women's national team has already qualified for the Tokyo Games, and they have a real shot at making some noise if they get a chance to compete. With names out of the WNBA like Nurse, Chanwa, Carlton, Alexander, and how about the next ones? Up-and-comers in the college ranks like Amaher and Edwards. The latter was just named the Big East Sixth Woman of the Year on the best team in the country. There's just no shortage of female talent stepping onto the international stage wearing red and white. The Summer Olympics are scheduled to begin in July. Needless to say, the pandemic has complicated competition. The team hasn't been together since Tokyo's qualifying tournament last February. They held a virtual training camp last month, while other countries trained together in person. They're hoping to hold a camp in Edmonton in May before playing the FIBA AmeriCup in June ahead of the Summer Games. I'll say it again, if this team gets a chance to compete, they can make some noise. Last Monday was International Women's Day, and it also marked the start of Women in Basketball Month, as women in this country, across all aspects of the game, are recognized, celebrated, and empowered. In other words, put some respect on their names. So buckle up, Canada. These women are getting ready to make this country proud. Joining me now is the head coach of the Women's National Program in the midst of the Mad Love campaign. I've always had mad love for Lisa Tomaitis. Lisa, it's been too long. Thank you for coming on the show and doing this.
Thank you for having me.
I know the pandemic has meant different things in different sports, and I know you're a basketball lifer from Mac to Greece and now Saskatchewan, but how much have you been able to get into the gym at all? Like, before we get to Canada basketball, just have you been able to get into the gym at all during this thing?
At Saskatchewan, you know, we are fortunate. We were able to get in September to November on a pretty regular basis, and nice. Then things shut down. And we really haven't been in much since then. We've had a little bit of, like, our under-19s have been able to get in for some training, and that's been it. Yeah, it's pretty meager.
You know, I'm a bit of a ball geek, so I'm always itching to talk basketball. But the Mad Love campaign that kicked off last week for Canada basketball, like, what do you think is the most important part of the initiative?
First of all, it's pretty amazing, you know, what MLSE has done. I know that this was set to roll out about a year ago, heading into Tokyo 2020. It had to be delayed for about a year. Yeah. Honestly, like, it's a big awareness and a big encouragement campaign, you know, a chance for many of our players, all of our players, to, you know, tell their stories. And I think, you know, all of us as women in sport, you know, we've all kind of faced challenges, hurdles, and those negative stereotypes. And so this is really a chance to combat them and encourage the young women that come after us to really pursue their dreams. So it's pretty exciting. you know, the way that they've done it is really cool, how they've rolled it out. I think those letters have been so impactful. I keep hearing from people across the country how amazing they are and the impact that they have had already.
Awesome. Lisa Tomitas joining me here on Tim and Friends. She is the head coach of the women's national team here in Canada. I hope everyone knows that the health and safety of our society is paramount, and I hope that's understood when having these conversations. That said, how much of a challenge has the last year been, and will it be trying to get ready for an Olympic Games?
Yeah, I mean, this is unheard of. For us to be competing for a medal in Tokyo and going for the podium, but yet haven't been together in person for 14 months now. It's unheard of. So, I mean, for us, it's really tough to be where we are and the restrictions on us, and to know that our competitors are training. But honestly, like, we're not feeling sorry for ourselves. We're not going to play the victim here. We've just really had to be creative in our training and in what we're doing together. Around the world, really, to best prepare us. So we've done some different things, and we're pretty happy and pleased with how they've gone. But again, there's no equalizer for being together and on the court and creating that chemistry, getting close to an Olympic Games.
Wouldn't be Canada basketball if it wasn't easy, right? Like,
yeah, exactly. It can't be easy. We're embracing the hard.
Nice. So let me ask you this. I really wanted Canada to know that you guys were ranked fourth in the world, and that podium was a real possibility, because I think it helps get funding. We've seen basketball grow at an unbelievable pace from the time that I was hosting court surfing back in the day, or doing your national championships in CIS or CIAU or U Sports or whatever the hell we called it at the time. But how much of a challenge is funding, even as the game has grown as much as we've seen in the last, say, decade?
I mean, funding's always going to be, the limiting factor. You always want to do more. As coaches, we always want more. We always, want to be doing more things for our athletes. We want to be together longer. We want to have, better opportunities, tougher competition, more support. You know, we'd love to have our athletes competing in Canada, not having to go abroad to make a living. We'd love to have a league here where, like I said, we're playing together. We're in our home country and not having to travel so much. So, yeah, that's always going to be the limiting factor. We've done some great things with limited resources, especially considering the resources that our main competitors have and what they have access to. But like I said, we're not going to play the victim. We're not going to, use that as a reason for not succeeding. We're going to pursue, and we're going to, like I said, get on that podium one way or the other.
I saw that the virtual training camp roster, and I know 4 of the 20 women were collegiate players. It feels like the next ones are close, like Letitia Amaher at South Carolina or Aaliyah Edwards at UConn. How close is the next group?
Yeah, they're getting there. It's great because, back in the day, a lot of our team were collegiate athletes. And now we're at the point where we have very few. They're all pros, and they've been playing professionally for a long period of time in the best leagues in the world. And now to have, Aaliyah here playing at UConn, following in Kia's footsteps, being on the best team in the country in the NC2A. Letitia, again, South Carolina, another number one seed. It's so great to see our Canadians on these top programs, and playing meaningful minutes, being counted on to perform and to perform on the highest stage. So they're getting there. This extra year has really helped them to be able to, again, take that next step up, compete at a high level, and just to help with their development and preparedness for the senior national team. So they're getting there. You can't compare when it comes to people who have the experience level that many of our athletes do. For women, you really peak in your late 20s. And so for some of these young ones, they have the athleticism for sure. And now it's just the basketball IQ and experience that they're just, continually building and developing.
All right, less than a minute here. What are the next steps? And I know they're not easy, but what are the next steps? And when do you get together?
Yeah, next steps. We've been meeting regularly virtually, so we're going to have a few more of those. Our athletes are finishing up their pro seasons in Europe. Some are getting ready to head off to their WNBA training camps. We're going to get together in May, train for close to a month. We're going to compete at the AmeriCup, wherever that may be. We're not too sure where that is yet. And then we're going to be off to Tokyo. It's coming up pretty quick.
Awesome. Listen, I really appreciate you taking some time for us, and we're all cheering for you. Do us proud.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
All right, there is Lisa Tomitas, the head coach of the Canadian national team, right here on Tim and Friends. And let me just say this one more time. Ranked fourth in the world and facing the hurdles that they are, if they get to that podium, it would be a monumental occasion for this country. And guess what? They could just do it. Still to come, we'll hear from Kyle Dubas, Mark Bergevin, less than a month away from the NHL trade deadline. Plus, after winning the Battle of Alberta last night, the Flames are now 3-0 under Daryl Sutter. Captain Mark Giordano will join me to discuss what the difference has been with Sutter back behind the bench in Cowtown. We'll do that all next, right here on Tim and Friends on the Sportsnet family of channels. Thank you, Sheepdogs. Thank you, Mark Strong. Can't wait to hear it from the announcer in Montreal. Both languages. That would be awesome. Coming up, hour number two at Tim and Friends. Sorry, being self-indulgent for a second there. Anthony Stewart in studio to discuss the crazy night in the North Division and just how tight that division is. Plus, a little cut or uncut with Anthony Stewart. We'll figure it out.com. Flames captain Mark Giordano joins me in mere moments from now as the Flames get back into the playoff picture with three straight wins under Daryl Sutter. Now, the Leafs, still atop the North, have stumbled a wee bit of late. GM Kyle Dubas met with the media today and was quite open about the team's ambition to add to his group before the April 12th deadline. Have a listen.
I don't think it's anywhere close to where we think we can be in time. So, and that's sort of the part that drives us and drives me is that I think we've had really good stretches this year, but there have been at times when I think that I haven't done a good enough job whatsoever in helping the team. It's great when you wake up every day and you're winning and it's a lot of fun and it's easy. But when you start to stumble a little bit, maybe you don't get the results that you want as consistently as you have. I think it's a great opportunity for growth. If our group can do that in combination of what they showed at the beginning of the year, I think the onus will be on me to do everything within reason to improve the group.
Would you consider trading a top prospect this year to improve your team?
Yes.
And just like that, Nick Robertson was trending in Canada, at least behind the Bears and Andy Dalton. We'll get to that in a flash. From the Leafs to the Habs, Mark Bergevin also met with the media today. Montreal halfway through their season, or at least at the halfway point of the season. Bergevin was asked about his expectations for the team and whether or not they've changed since the start of the season.
It did not change. It's a tough league. It's every night it's a battle. And expect the same down the road. So, we have to make the playoff. I feel we have a team to make the playoff. And then once we get in, I feel that, anything's possible.
Anything's possible. No North Division games in the schedule tonight, but we got the Bruins and Penguins coming up tonight on Sportsnet. Plus an NBA doubleheader on Sportsnet 1. Knicks, who gave the Nets a run. That was a good game last night, if you catch that. They get the Sixers. So they go from the Nets to the Sixers, two of the top teams in the East. And by the way, RJ Barrett's been playing a lot better of late, followed by the T-Wolves and the Lakers from Staples. Got it good, and since you understood, Jays and Phillies from Clearwater earlier today. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. celebrated his 22nd birthday in style. He had a deep shot in the top of the second, went off the top of the wall. Vladdy cruises into second with a double, would later score to make it 1-0. Now 3-0, Vladdy Dottie. He liked to potty. He goes the other way, sending a shot down the line, ends up at second, another double. Top five. Jays up 6-3. Vladdy lost a little weight. Has anyone ever told you that? How about a shot to short deep in the hole, legs it out? That's an infield single. It was deep in the hole, but it was an infield single. Very next pitch, Vlad, straying a little too far off first, is picked off. Okay, so the last thing that you need to see from Vladdy would be a triple, right? top of the sixth, it was 10-3, by the way, with what looked like their starting lineup, sends a shot off the top of the wall, bounces around, and Vladdy, on his horse, slides safely into third easily with the triple, 4-for-4 on the day, and is batting .529 in the spring. By the way, the Jays, with their look to be their starting lineup for opening day, won 14-5, putting a few numbers up on the Phillies. Jays GM Ross Atkins met with the media today virtually, of course, and he gave us some nuggets. Charlie Montoyo, his option for 2022 has been picked up. Nate Pearson suffered a mild re-aggravation of his groin while throwing a bullpen. No timeline yet, but he will almost certainly not be on the roster for opening day. As for getting back to playing in Toronto, here's what Atkins had to say on that.
I think our goal remains to get back to Toronto as soon as possible. I can't wait for that day and feel good about our alternatives. So if we're not in Dunedin, I think the most likely scenario is that it could be a little bit longer than those first two homestands, but we work diligently on our alternatives to a place other than Toronto and Dunedin, as well as everything we can humanly do to safely transition to Toronto when that day comes. And that's out of our hands, obviously, but can't wait for that day and know that it'll be here soon.
I think we're underrating just how hard it is to not play at home. Like the Raptors, who announced a short time ago that Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, Malachi Flynn, Patrick McCaw have all been cleared to practice tonight ahead of the Raptors game against the Pistons tomorrow. That's why the plane went back to Tampa before going to Detroit. Siakam, McCaw, Flynn, questionable for the game in Detroit tomorrow. Fred VanVleet, doubtful, while OG Anunoby remains out. So not everybody, but a couple bodies, maybe some relief for the Raptors. All right, to the NFL, and the Jaguars made their first big move of the Urban Meyer era today, reportedly reaching an agreement with former Seahawks cornerback Shaquille Griffin on a 3-year, $44.5 million deal, 29 of that guaranteed. Meanwhile, the Patriots continue their shopping spree, agreeing to a deal with tight end Hunter Henry, 3 years, $37.5 million, 25 guaranteed. Pats have now added the top two free agent tight ends to their roster. Adam Schefter tweeted, in less than 24 hours, the Patriots have guaranteed over $137.5 million, placing them second in NFL history for the most guaranteed money in a free agent signing period. The record could be theirs before free agency officially begins at 4 p.m. on Wednesday. He also included a graphic that shows five of the previous biggest spenders in the free agent period. Three of them have missed the playoffs, and none have gotten past the wild card round. None of them also had Bill Belichick as their coach. Some quarterbacks changing teams, but it's not Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson. Schefter reporting that the Bears made a very aggressive pursuit of Wilson, but were told that Seattle is not trading him. So instead, they went out and signed Andy Dalton. So Bears fans saying, how could you possibly get any worse than Mitch Trubisky? The Bears said, hold my beer, and signed Andy Dalton. Tyrod Taylor agrees to a one-year deal with the Texans, and Jacoby Brissett a one-year deal with the Dolphins. You need two quarterbacks in this league right now. I actually like the Dolphins move. We started the show by talking about the Scotia North Division and just how crazy the ups and downs have been. Perhaps nowhere is that more evident than in Calgary, the home of our next guest, captain of the Flames, Mark Giordano.
Your captain, number 5, Mark Giordano.
There's a chance now for Giordano, right in, scores! Mark Giordano, a beauty! Giordano right in, scores! The captain puts
puts it home. What a goal by Mark Giordano.
Terrific year for him defensively, offensively.
And the Norris Trophy goes to Mark Giordano.
He's been a rock for the Calgary Flames, and not just as a player, but as a leader. He's their captain.
Go ahead and try to show me a more complete defenseman in National Hockey League.
He'll go down as one of the all-time great defensemen for the Flames when he does hang it up.
And Gio joins us now from Calgary. Welcome to Tim and Friends, Mark. Thanks always for taking the time and doing this with us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
We lost our boy, Sydney. I don't know if you heard this, but he's gone. Breakfast television. I know you had to grind to get to the show. Is there any way you would grind by waking up at 3 a.m. in the morning to do a morning television show?
I don't think so. I don't. You know what? I was a bit surprised when that got announced there. A few months ago, but yeah, happy for him. Good on him. It's something different. Didn't really think that I saw the fit at the start, but I'm sure he'll do well.
Just wait till he's hosting The Bachelor Canada. Then he's hit the big time. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Listen, it's been an interesting start to this season, and I want to get to the entirety of the season for you guys. But before we get there, what's it been like just to be winners of three in a row like you are now?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a good week for us. I think more than anything, we're trying to get consistency in our game. So we found a little bit of that here in the last few games. We've done some good things, but again, we have a hill to climb here. I think at the start of the week, we're 6 points out of it, and we're still not in a spot we want to be. So we've done some good things here, but we got to build on this week.
Mark Giordano here on Tim and Friends. There are a few preconceived notions about Daryl Sutter. When you guys hired him, a lot of things were said about what he would bring to Calgary. But what stood out to you most about your new coach?
Just the intensity that he brings every day to the rink, practice and games, and then the attention to detail. I think that's what he's been preaching the most. I think you see it in our game where our details have been better the last few, and we're playing faster. And those are two areas where he's been really honest, like to be harder, you know, at the details and be quicker. And I think we've done a good job, but we didn't feel like we played that well last night, to be honest, and we got a win. So we'll hopefully move forward and play better tomorrow.
Sometimes you got to get those and take those 2 points and run. So the intensity, how does it manifest itself in just a week? Like, I know we had two early practices, but how do you see kind of that intensity and that meticulous nature manifest itself, at least early on?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously he comes in the room. It starts with his mindset, his attention to detail, video, and little things on the board and all that. But, you know, as players too, we were quite upset with ourselves and how the season was going. Obviously, you know, Wardle was a great guy and he takes the fall, but it's on us to be better and play more desperate. And I think you've seen that in the last few games, and we're going to have to be a desperate team here right to the end to get in. So we got to bring that every night.
I was laughing about the 18 shots allowed in game one under Sutter versus the Habs and amazed that he could get his systems in place that fast. Like, are they in place? Were you actually able to get them? Or are you working with some sort of hybrid from where you were to where he wants to be?
Yeah, I think our systems haven't changed too much. Little subtle differences, but I think Daryl was, he said it right from the start, he's not going to be able to come in here and change our systems completely, but the things that he is preaching are playing quickly, playing with a lot of pace and a lot of intensity. So I think we've done, especially in those Montreal games, we did a good job of it. And, you know, we got a big win last night, but we can be better and keep going. I think those are important things in today's game, especially the playing quick part.
Captain of the Flames, Mark Giordano here on Tim and Friends. Sutter talked about unfinished business and said on the Fan 960, in fact, that, quote, I'm not interested in coaching just to coach. I'm interested in coaching strictly to win a Stanley Cup, and that's it. Is that something that might take the room getting used to, or is that something that he walked in and talked about with you guys right away?
Yeah, he did mention that to us right away, and I think as a player, that's – obviously, I know for myself, it's a great thing to hear that Daryl's a proven winner. He's won the Stanley Cup twice. And for him to say that he's not interested in just coaching, he's interested in winning the Stanley Cup again, obviously, for him to choose to coach our team means that he thinks we have a chance to win the Cup. So as players, you take that and you know, it's great to hear, but now we got to respond and play the way he wants us to get there.
You mentioned Warden, and I know, like, I don't want to just glaze over it. Like, stumbling out of the gate cost coaching change. It also brought up questions about the room and if there was something that needed to be fixed in that room. As a captain, did it hurt to hear that kind of stuff about your room?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think just because I think if you're in the room and with us, you know how tight of a group we have. And I know everyone says that about their team, but we really do believe that, and a lot of good relationships in there. So, I mean, that comes with losing, though. You don't play well, you don't win games, and people are going to try to come up with reasons why, right? So that was on us, but yeah, it did sting a bit to hear that, but we know what we have in there. We know we can be a good and great team, so hopefully we can get there.
So the room's good?
The room is great.
Awesome. Mark Giordano joining us here on Tim and Friends. I saw Ryan Leslie post on Twitter a shot of Daryl Sutter's wheels. Have you seen Sutter's skates? He said he hasn't changed them since he started coaching in Chicago. Are they as awesome in person as they are on Twitter? Like, what do you make of the wheels of the coach?
Yeah, I mean, those are... I'm old enough to know what those skates are. I think I had a pair of 3000s growing up too. So those are old school for sure. Those are, you know, I remember those skates growing up. Those are some of my favorite skates. Those Bauer, you know, the 1000s, the 2000s, 1000s went all the way up. And then I think, I don't know what came after that, the Supremes maybe, but yeah, that brings back some memories for sure.
I couldn't afford those, so I don't remember what those were. Let me ask you this. You brought up old school, and we hear that a lot. Do you feel like there's room for old school coach in new NHL, or have you seen a little bit of it? Like, you've been around long enough to know what we're talking about when we say old school, and there's this fan idea of what old school is. Do you think Daryl Sutter fits that mold? Do you think he's changed a little bit? Like, what do you think about that kind of narrative or storyline?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people give Daryl enough credit for how he actually adapts and reads the game and has changed over, you know, the years with the rule changes and all that. And I think as a player, when you listen to him in the room, a lot of what he says is just honest. It's the truth, and it's bang on most of the time. So, yeah, I think I get why people think he's just an old school. He is a hard nosed coach, but he does have a good mind for the game and has adapted for sure.
Yeah, there's I steal quotes a lot, and there's one that says we'd rather be ruined by praise than saved by criticism. And I respond better to the criticism. Like, if you have constructive criticism, sometimes that helps. Listen, last one I got for you is I read a story this morning on the internet, and it was talking about your win and how you gutted out the win last night. And it said, and I quote, "The newfound swagger is undeniable." Does it feel like you guys have a little bit of swagger back?
Yeah, I mean, it's been three games. We know we got a lot of work, but that's, you know, especially those first two against Montreal, I felt like we were holding the puck more, we were controlling the puck more, controlling the play more than we have all season. So we need to get that game on the ice. I think what was good about last night was we know we weren't at our best, but you know, the team comes back and ties the game, and we find a way to get that fourth one in regulation to win. So definitely a good feeling. But yeah, again, like we have to. In today's game, you have to play with swagger. You have to play with confidence, or teams will eat you up. Especially teams in our division with the superstars, they'll just come right at you. So you got to play with confidence and a little bit of that swagger, and hopefully we will for the rest of the year.
Here I am chirping his 3000s, and I think I got 15-year-old Reeboks at home, so maybe I should be quiet for a little bit. Hey, listen, it's always great catching up with you. Thank you very much for doing this, and we'll do it again down the road.
Okay, thanks, man.
There is the captain of the Calgary Flames, Mark Giordano. Listen, it's been a little lonely in studio today. No offense, Jesse. But after this, Anthony Stewart will drop by and we'll talk about a very tight North division and whether he wants it to continue next season. We'll see what else Stewie has up his sleeve. Stick around. Tim and Friends on Sportsnet. Welcome back to Tim and Friends, live on the Sportsnet family of channels, at least until Hockey Central takes over on Sportsnet. So if you want to stick with us, flip over to Sportsnet 360 right about now. I say us, because it's not just Jesse Rubinoff in the building. We've now got Victoria Park to near White's Road covered. Kingston Road to near Steeles covered. Allow me to reintroduce my next friend, Anthony Stewart, the pride and joy of Scarborough, Ontario. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. And I'm just happy now to be doing a radio program with the real mic, because I've been doing Hockey Central for the last year on an iPod Touch. So if don't mind me if you see me walking off with this microphone, because it's a classic.
The White's, I'm convinced the White's Road is in my head. We did it on a WhatsApp for a year. We basically did a radio show, and Sid and I, the only way that we could communicate with each other during the show was on a WhatsApp.
I still have a couple of BBM contacts here right now, too, so talk about nostalgia.
Be honest, how many BBM contacts do you have?
I have 17, so.
Do you really?
And it's fully encrypted, too. Yeah, you now they had to switch to BBM Enterprise, so it's not a personal, it's now through Enterprise. So I'm talking to all the CEOs about who knows what.
I know now. I know why you've held on to the BlackBerry for so long. You just said encrypted. You know
if
what you're doing.
If you're an NHL hockey player, you know what I'm talking about. You got to be encrypted.
I remember back in the day, a mutual friend of ours, Cabral Richards, said to me, "BlackBerry's the way to go." Why? Yeah. Encrypted. All right. I know you were talking about earlier today. I was going to pepper you with all of the North Division stuff, but I know you were listening in on Kyle Dubas's news conference. That was really interesting. But I want to get to our poll question of the day. Could you see I'm not saying forever, but could you see the North Division, the All-Canadian Division, staying for one more year? And I'm not saying that you play all teams 9 or 10 times and that's the only teams you play. I'm talking about old divisional format where you get 4 or 5 against your division.
You watched that Calgary-Edmonton game last night, and just imagine if there were fans in the building, just the electricity that'd be going through, seeing all those fights every single night. And why wouldn't you want that? Why wouldn't you want to have a Toronto rivalry with Ottawa or Montreal and seeing Connor McDavid more than twice a year? So I'm a big proponent of this Canadian division because it's entertaining hockey, and for being on the analyst side, it's a lot easier for me just paying attention to the Canadian division. And I got people texting me, "Hey, did you see what Barzal did last night?" I'm like, no, I was watching Calgary-Edmonton. I was watching Jujhar Khaira fight Richie last night. So I like it. I think the fans will like it. But as you mentioned, it's not just for, all 10 games of the season. It's 4 or 5. I'm all for it.
Yeah. Listen, it's not going to happen. It's probably
not. Why not?
I feel like the travel
money is too.
I know. Cash, Wu-Tang Clan once told me, cash rules everything around me.
Yeah.
Cream, get the money. I know you listen to the Dubas thing, and as soon as, it's amazing. He says prospect and Nick Robertson is trending on Twitter. Like, it's crazy to be a Leaf and what that entails. But do you see them go? Matthias Ekholm is a guy that people have brought up, but you got to match salaries here. Like, they don't have much maneuverability when it comes to the salary cap.
And that's funny. The first question was, what are you going to do about Freddie Anderson? And it's like, you're driving a Dodge Caravan and you want a Bentley truck, but you only got $6. You can't afford it. So, I don't get this whole Freddie talk because everyone talks about the problem. What's the solution?
Right.
Right. So, for me, I think the Maple Leafs, they got to add some complementary pieces, but they can't make a big, big splash because whatever money's going out, you can say money's coming in. So, they're telling Taylor Hall, where are you going to find the $9 million?
Right. You can't unless you traded one of the big guns, and I don't think they're doing that.
We're not talking about Nylander today. Refuse. Okay?
The Neanderthals?
Neanderthals, yeah.
I got it. So, but if that's what the Leafs are looking to add, then they can't do it unless they give up one of those pieces. So it has to be complementary. But if you're talking about top six, how do you do that without finding money?
Well, that's why, when Justin Bourne and I mentioned, we were talking about, a guy like Eric Staal. Right. Cap hit, I think it's $3.25 million. And he's a guy that can play in your top six, two seasons removed from a 40-goal season. He's got the championship pedigree. He can move in up and down your lineup, play the game the right way. And people are saying, he's got a bad year in Buffalo. Everyone's having a bad year. I don't even play for Buffalo. My brother doesn't anymore. We're still having a bad year in Buffalo. So I think he's the perfect chip just because of the price and what he can bring. And he's a veteran leadership guy. I'm a big fan of Eric Staal, so I'm going to continue to beat that drum. Eric Staal's coming to Toronto.
I want to get into the rise and fall and the ebbs and flows of this season when we come back. We only got about a minute before we hand it off to Hockey Central. Do you trust, though, that Freddie Anderson can win a couple series? Because that's what Toronto is now asking after this little slide over the last five or six games.
I say yes. Just based on being in this market, everyone's talking about, well, we need a Vasilevskiy. To be able to thrive in this market as a goaltender, it's very, very tough. And you go over all the goalies over the years, the last 10, 15 years, they've been looking for a guy to really do the job. So I think Freddie Anderson's a top five goalie in the National Hockey League in this market to be able to handle the pressure. How many hot mic topics has he had throughout his whole career? Not many. He hasn't really mentioned any, gotten in any controversy. He comes in, does his job. I think now they have the team now to surround him and do the job and win a couple rounds.
So top five. Is he better than Price?
No.
Markstrom?
Yes.
Hellebuyck, no.
No. Is this shown in Calgary? Yes.
It is shown in Calgary. We just had Giordano on this.
Okay. Because there goes my mentions.
but that's what you're going to face in the postseason, right? Like that's what you're going to face. So that's what you got to look at. And that's why when I look up, you know, and you saw, although the defense corps, I will say this, like Hellebuck's doesn't have that great a defense corps in front of him. All right, we're going to talk about this. Can you stick around?
I'm still here.
All right. It's better because he was only here for 7 minutes, so it would have been a real douchebag move to kick him off after 7 minutes. We'll continue the talk about the North Division, and we'll pull out an old... I don't like the phrasing on this. We'll do cut or uncut next. Is it okay to trash talk when you're losing? We'll discuss with Stewie next. Hockey Central on Sportsnet. We continue on 360 and 590. Tim and friends on the Sportsnet family of channels. Anthony Stewart in studio. Jesse Rubinoff in studio. And that's the most that we can have in studio because of COVID protocols. Duncan writes in and asks, is at Stu Monroe rocking an old school four-color Bic on the desk with Uncle Tim McAuliffe? Hashtag 80s flashback. Hashtag cool and elementary.
Absolutely. And this, we call this the Scarborough iPhone, because if you had one of these in middle school, you were the man. And good thing that you mentioned that, because I came bearing gifts today for you.
Really?
So this now is the original iPhone 5 of pens, big pens here. So that's for you there.
Oh, for me?
And then this is the gold version here, the black version, limited edition big pen. So that's for you.
Goodness.
I came bearing gifts. Make sure that you use that and don't lose it, because those cost me like $20 each.
You've seen, like, I have like a tray full of. All right, yeah, you've seen this. All right,
I can take it back.
I am honored. No, I'm a pen freak, and those two Scarborough iPhone 5 and the gold version, is that what you're talking about here?
Yep.
I will take and I will rock with honor, my friend. All right, let's get back. By the way, did you see Ryan Leslie's tweet of Daryl Sutter's wheels?
Yeah, those Bauer are throwbacks, 3000s. But I just recently did Battle of the Blades, and I had some old dusty wheels too, so I understand where he's coming from. When you get a pair of wheels that you like, you want to wear them as much as possible. Mine aren't that much newer than those. I have the old Bauer Air 90s, so I'm not sure if you remember those ones. They were gray with a little bit of gold on them. So Bauer Air 90s, best skate ever made. I still have a pair of those.
I was chirping, and then I realized all of a sudden, like, I have probably like 15-year-old Reebok wheels.
With the pumps?
Remember? Yeah, with the pumps. Remember those babies?
Yeah,
at the time, that was big time.
Yeah.
My buddy Toe at Just Hockey hooked me up with those ones back in the day. That was really
Don nice. Mills and Eglinton. Is that Scarborough?
Nah, but that's Maestro area. Don Mills and Eglinton.
Yep.
In the line, in the song. All right, so let's get back to the Leafs and where they're at within the North Division. Are the rise and falls of the North, because it seems like if you wait a day, the standings change and the knee-jerk reactions in whatever market change. Are the rise and falls just based on how well the goalies are playing? I mean, you look at Edmonton goes on a run, Mike Smith looking great. They lose a game they shouldn't have lost last night to Calgary. Thatcher Demko gets hot, and the Canucks look great. If he's not playing awesome, they're average. Freddie Anderson now in these struggles. Is it just the goalies that we're talking about here? Or is that oversimplified?
I blame the bookworms in this because, you know, when you're going against a team playing 4 or 5-game segment, you have guys doing hours and hours of video. So if you lose a game, you know exactly what adjustments you have to make going into game 2 and right. 3. So obviously goaltending is a big part of that, but teams are just well prepared. If you're preparing for a 1-game segment, you know, anything can go awry. But when you're playing 2, 3, 4 games, when you're making those adjustments, that can help you get back into it. But it's a 56-game season, and with the Leaf Nation, you know, sort of getting up in arms with where they're at right now, I don't really get it, because in a 56-game season, there's going to be highs and lows. And for me, the last 6, 7 games that they've been losing, they beat themselves. It wasn't like they were outclassed, and you were talking about the Corsi, and you're getting into the analytics now, too. Right. They outplayed their opponents. So it's just about adjusting, going back, having a good week of practice, and I'm sure they'll come back ready to go.
Yeah, 4 out of those 6 games were basically dominant, and they just lost to a hot goalie. One of them was Thatcher Demko. So as I look at the bottom of those standings and I see Carey Price where he is and the little bump that the Flames got from Daryl Sutter, you wonder how close that'll remain for the rest of the year. How do you see that working out? Like I've said from the start that I think it's a sandwich. I think Ottawa's at the bottom, the Leafs are on top, and the rest is going to be a battle royale. Like, how do you see that playing out?
Well, Dan Riccio's probably having his midday espresso right now, so he's not watching. And so I'll have to say, I think the Vancouver Canucks are just going to fall out of it. They're just too far behind right now. I think Calgary will get a bump with Sutter, but I really think it's going to be Montreal really jumping into probably second or third place, because I don't care what anyone says. I'll debate you on the streets of Sesame. I'll debate you on Twitter. Carey Price is still a top goalie in the National Hockey League. Until he doesn't make the playoffs or gets knocked out in a round, what he did last year in that bubble against the Pittsburgh Penguins, against Crosby and Malkin, until he's the king. So you got to beat the king. So for me, I think the Montreal Canadiens are a dark horse in this division. So Winnipeg's great as well. I still think the Leafs are the cream of the crop, but keep an eye on the Montreal Canadiens.
Do you think that Daryl Sutter's systems, especially the way the division has been played to this point, where it's been run and gun for the most part, like it's the highest scoring division, do you think he could kind of upset the apple cart with the way they played the game, or the way he has played the game in the past?
People need to have a really short memory just based on what happened with LA Kings. LA Kings, a couple of years ago, they were falling out of the mix. He came in, they win a Stanley Cup. And he's not a big X's and O guys. He's a bit of, you know, he does have a defensive scheme, but he's an accountability guy. Whether you're the top player or the worst, he holds them to the same standard. And you saw what happened his first practice. Guys are skating up and down. And you know that you're being held to account every single shift. And if you have a shift off, he's going to let you know about it. So he's got guys playing for him, not out of fear, but just out of respect. And that accountability factor, I think, what the Calgary Flames have been missing. And I think they're showing a good response to him, you know, winning the 3 games that he's been on the bench so far.
You know, we had Gio on the show, and I just, when they were struggling out of the gate, you got the feeling like this was the last go for this group. Have you ever been on a team where if it doesn't go well, the GM's probably gone? If it doesn't go well, they're gonna shake up the top leadership group. Like, it just felt like for the Flames, if they didn't figure out this year, someone was moving on. It was already a coach, it might be a GM. Can that motivate a group, or can it also turn the group the other way?
Well, I thought you were going to say, if it doesn't go well, they're going to sell the team to Winnipeg. And that's what happened to us in Atlanta. I think with this group now, before the coaching change, they were waiting for something to happen. They were waiting for a trade or a movement. And say what you will, with this group of Johnny Hockey, Monahan, they have to get it done, or those are the next chips to fall too. But Goudreau, he's a great player. You know, 99 points a couple years ago. They need to get him back up to par. So I think if they don't win a couple rounds, I could see some big changes coming in Calgary.
All right, you want to do a little cut or uncut here?
Sure.
So, Jesse, will you explain the idea of cut or uncut for those who don't remember it before we get into actual cut or uncut?
I tee up a little narrative, a little story, and then you guys decide whether it's cut or uncut. Uncut is positive, cut is negative. You got that?
One more time?
He's using the fancy big pen.
Uncut. He's using the big pen. Yeah. He's using the big pen.
For the people at home, as he writes it down. Cut
uncut
back.
Is positive. Cut is negative. We don't like it. Cut, we do not like. Okay?
So you're cutting it out.
Perfect. We're cutting it out.
I gotta get it red here.
The scissors. The scissors in the graphic tell the whole story.
Okay.
All right. So why don't we start with the NBA? And Kyle Kuzma was up to some old tricks last night, taking a technical free throw. And this is going to be nothing but air. Now, this is where it gets good. Okay, look at the Warriors bench. That's who they're playing, the Warriors. Mm-hmm. Now, they let him hear about it, but the Warriors at this point are down 10 in the game, and they went on to lose the game by 35. So I ask you, cut or uncut, chirping like this when you're losing the game?
I'm still going to go uncut just based on, you know, I was a Scarborough champion, Birchmount, when we beat, I think it was Laurier for the Scarborough City Championships. And I could make that shot blindfolded. So you miss a free throw in the NBA air ball. Sorry, you deserve to get every single chirp you get.
Timmy?
The under the bucket shot of the air ball makes it even worse because.
Wasn't even close.
Sorry, I'm a little too relaxed. I'm leaning back. it wasn't even close. Like, he was wide left and air ball short. I'm okay with it. Uncut, because each one of those guys on the bench could hit the rim.
Yes.
Like that, you're getting your rear end handed to
you. The Monstar stole his power there.
The jury's still out on whether it's the first air ball and a technical free throw ever.
Well, that's
there are people looking at it.
That's the point. You get chosen to take that free throw on a technical. Cut or uncut, choosing Kyle Kuzma when you know he's capable of doing that.
Now it's cut.
Yeah.
Not anymore. He won't be taking any technical free throws anymore. Kuzma, I have another one on Kuzma, if you can believe it. Okay, on Friday, he scored 15 points in the fourth en route to a win. Made a couple big threes. Now listen to his response to this friend of the show, Dave McMenamin's question about a specific possession in the game.
Okay.
Was that a set play? Did you think LeBron had a passing lane to you there?
We were looking at each other the entire possession. I was pretty much eye basketball, and he found me and made shot.
So the question here is casually using profanity in media avails, because you understand when they're angry, they're upset about something, they can swear and you take it. But Kuzma there in answering that question is just like casually throwing out inappropriate language.
I'm going uncut because the media is always complaining about the vanilla interviews, especially in hockey, about the bucks in deep, the tripping, the hooking, the slashing penalties. They want to see something. They want to see something that's quotable. I'm going uncut.
Uncut.
I'm going uncut too, because he's bang on. We don't want the 110% in the corners, pucks in deep. We'd rather hear what they're actually talking about on the floor. So completely uncut.
Okay, we got four uncuts, two topics, four uncuts already. We're gonna get to a cut eventually.
By the way, was that a hockey player impression right there that you did?
That was a coach, a certain coach. I'm not gonna say who. Twitter knows.
All right.
Sticking with basketball, Jimmy Butler, who's also always good in front of a mic after another Heat win. They're on fire, by the way, lately. Jimmy Buckets gave us another great post-game moment. Why don't we have a listen to that?
Does it feel like you're coalescing as much as the record shows into something? I mean, 10 of 11, pretty special.
Don't do that. Come on now.
Coming together.
What the hell does that mean?
I mean, you won 10 of 11, so you're obviously showing how good you can be, I would think.
Well, you said a big word. You confuse me.
Oh, coalescing. That means coming together, congealing, gelling.
Okay, you just said that. I think we're coming together well.
Okay, so the question here, Anthony, you were an athlete, now you're a member of the media. So cut or uncut using big words like coalescing in media events?
I'm going cut, because when I first started on media, I was trying to spend 20 seconds, 30 seconds asking a question. And Bob Babinski, we all know Bob Babinski, talent guy, shout out Bob Babinski, say, just ask the damn question. So I'm going, you got to cut that. Keep it simple.
Coalescing.
I only use words like that when I can't find another word, which happens to me a lot.
Right.
And I always, there's a saying, think like a genius, communicate in the language of the people. Just use words that everyone understands.
So it's a cut.
It's a cut. But I oftentimes walk that road because I can't find another word. So I end up using some 10-cent word that oftentimes I can't spell.
Well, the reporter lucked out in that instance because it became a pretty good clip for everybody to use. Why don't we move on?
Yesterday, we're coalescing.
We are coalescing. Or gelling, in other words.
I don't even know. They explained it. I still don't know what it means.
Yesterday was a very busy day for NFL free agency and the insiders reporting the news. But it was Shams Charania, one of the great NBA insiders, along with Woj, who broke the Jameis Winston contract in a tweet. And NFL insider Ian Rappaport responded by telling Shams to stick to basketball. Cut or uncut? Insiders scooping from other sports.
This isn't the first time either. Like, we've seen this before.
We have, actually, the Woj tweet responding to Adam Schefter. I believe we have it.
Yeah, like, this happens all the time. Like, I feel like...
There it is. That happened last year.
This is very American, and I'll tell you why it's very American. Because they all have huge, massive egos, and they're just trying to get the biggest scoop out there. I'm going to say, you know what? I'm going to say cut. Stick to your own game, and if you got a scoop, help out another guy. You're all making really big money. Like, those guys are making millions of dollars. I'm going to say stick to your own sport and help out someone else instead of breaking that news. It's like, you're greedy.
I'm going to go uncut because on our Hockey Central show, we literally have a segment called Stealing Other People's Mail where we take their mail back and we address it. So it's Twitter. Twitter's for the jokes and some news. Have a little bit of personality with it. Don't take it too personally. I'm going uncut.
Okay, you're in the studio, Hockey Night in Canada. Did you hear the Sabres clips from last night? Why don't we hear them now?
Can you provide any evidence that this team hasn't quit on each other, this coach, or its fan base?
I mean, I don't know what you want me to say, Mike. It's not a good result tonight. Like, I don't know what you want me to say with that. Love the group of guys, love the coach. You know, the result isn't good enough.
I certainly think your players have quit on you, but given that, even if you disagree, how do you run the same lineup out tomorrow? How do you not go to your GM and say, get me three new players right now? How can you continue to do this night after night with this group not responding to you at all?
I have one job here, and that's to work with the players that are on our roster and the players that are here on our taxi squad, and this is what we will do again tomorrow. We are in a definitely negative funk right now, and I only know one thing, is that's to fight.
Big time yikes on that one. So things obviously not going well with the Sabres. And a couple of days ago, Mike Harrington, who is one of the reporters asking the questions, he works for the Buffalo News, published his NHL power rankings and had the Sabres ranked 32nd behind the Seattle Kraken, who have yet to play a game in the NHL. Now the question is, cut or uncut, being ranked below a non-existent team by your local newspaper?
Sorry, you're asking cut or uncut? Like, that's... remarkably cut. There's no way it's not uncut.
I'm going cut because, say it to my face, you know, knowing Mike Harrington is probably sitting under the covers at home in his pajamas eating some popcorn, I want to see you put the mic in your face, into the coach's face, yeah, or player's face, and ask that to, you know, ask it face to face.
That's a Zoom question.
That's a Zoom question, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And you know why? Because I've asked questions in my pajamas under the covers too while doing the so I know.
Are you eating popcorn too?
No, chocolate almonds.
Is that the go-to?
Oh, yeah.
Chocolate almonds?
From Costco, yeah.
Didn't you have chocolate pistachios over there, Sebi? I haven't done chocolate pistachios ever before.
Well, we're talking about food
and
drink.
That's fancy stuff right there.
St. Patty's Day is tomorrow.
Yes.
A lot of people like to indulge on St. Patty's Day, drinking a little bit of green beer.
Mm-hmm.
Cut or uncut, green beer on St. Patty's Day.
Isn't the dye just bad for you? I don't get this. Just drink beer.
Go
What's the
uncut.
Difference?
Who cares? It all comes out the same way.
That's fair enough. I don't get it. And listen, the McAuliffe's not Irish, so I'm not one to speak here. The McAuliffe is actually Maltese. The McAuliffe's is not Irish, but I just don't get it. You're just putting dye into beer. You're drinking the beer.
I've drank beer out of someone's dirty shoe before. I don't really care about if it's green.
That's worse than the green stuff.
Is what you're saying?
That's good stuff.
Since we did this, you might as well stick around for last call.
Absolutely.
All right, one last round, one last call. I don't know if it's green or if it's normal color, but as Stewie said, it's all going out the same way. And we'll do it next right here on Tim and Friends. Tim McAuliffe and friends of the show. The friends of the show are you, Anthony Stewart, and Jesse Rubinoff, who's going to take over with Last Call.
We got Last Call, and we're starting with a fun one, Sister Jean. March Madness officially begins with the first four on Thursday. And do you remember this Sister Jean from Loyola's Chicago Cinderella run to the Final Four in 2018? Well, Loyola Chicago is back in the tournament today. They confirmed that Sister Jean will be back too after she received the COVID-19 vaccine, which is pretty cool for a 101-year-old. Team Chaplin has not attended any games since the pandemic began, but she will be in attendance Friday in Indianapolis for their first round matchup with Georgia Tech. Anthony, The question is, are you a March Madness guy, and will you be watching Sister Jean?
I am not, but that's amazing. At 101 years old, getting out of bed and going to those games.
Crazy.
When I'm 41, I'm going to be having a hard time getting out of bed to do anything. So kudos to Sister Jean.
I can't believe that she's actually going to go to the games at 101. That is, it feels like if we're getting near the end of the pandemic, that is one of the signs that Sister Jean at 101 would be going to March Madness.
It's a big step forward for everybody. Ugh. A lot of people picking Loyola Chicago to go pretty deep. Again, you never know with these teams that are seeded a little bit high nowadays.
The game's changed, right?
The game has
changed. Duke's in that tournament, right?
Nope.
There's going to be a lot of responses on Twitter now that I'm going to sort through. All right, why don't we move on to the next one? Right. Lee Westwood, pretty busy couple weeks for him. He's been in the final pairing in each of the last two PGA Tour events. Westwood's fiance, his life's pretty good. Ellen Story has been caddying for him since 2018, but he plans to have his 19-year-old son, caddy for him at the Masters next month. After the final round of the Players on Sunday, Westwood said he and Sam were headed to Augusta to play yesterday and today in what he called a lads and dads trip. Tim, what's your dream sports trip with your kids?
Oh, wow. That'd be pretty cool, though, to be able to play Augusta with your son. And just to do what he's doing, that's awesome. I think, like, my son's a baseball guy, and he actually is planning out, when the pandemic ends, a cross-country trip, and he wants to stop at different ballparks. We have family in Indiana, so he's like, all right, we go from Indiana, St. Louis, we watch a Cards game in St. Louis, then we're going to go to Denver.
Amazing.
And we'll stay near the Pepsi Center, and there's a water park behind.
Are you cool with it, though, is the question.
Yeah, I'm down with that. So whenever I, well.
My ideal trip would be to Sleep Country so we can take a nap and try all the mattresses. But my son.
Hold on, explain. You have four kids.
Let's play a nap game. See their eyes close the longest. But my son is, he loves.
He's got a Sleep Country
He
deal
loves
coming.
Australia, and I try to manipulate him, saying, well, you know, they do have pro hockey in Australia. So if you pick up your hockey lessons, you can go play pro. So now he's picking up his hockey because he thinks it's a one-way ticket to Australia. But how long is that flight? 24 hours?
Yeah.
I'm not enticed to go down
it.
Under.
It's worth it. You'll have fun if you go there.
Have you been? There.
I've never been, but I
okay.
Busted. I want to go.
You should go as well.
When I have kids, I'll be going to Australia. Maybe even to golf. They have some good golf courses out there, too.
Hold on a second. You can't say that before you have the kids.
That's true, too.
Like, I know there's iPads and stuff, but 24 hours on a plane with your kids, like, you're asking for trouble.
Fine. Maybe the boys when COVID's over.
We take two cars going to the grocery store. I'm like, I'll meet you there.
People why don't
think
we move
like
on?
We're divorced or something because they're showing up separately.
So
no,
good.
I just can't deal with the car rides.
Love it. Okay, LeBron James is now a part owner of the Boston Red Sox, if you can believe this.
I don't get this.
The Boston Globe reporting today that LeBron and business partner Maverick Carter have become partners in Fenway Sports Group, who own the Sox. LeBron has described himself as a Yankees fan. He wears Yankees hats all the time, as you can see there. He's also been supporting the Dodgers and Cleveland. Anthony, do you have any problem with LeBron supporting multiple teams?
That was Ken Reed running into the studio.
Pucks in deep.
Yelling pucks in deep.
Because, you know, from the decision, he left Cleveland. He went down to Miami. Then he went back to Cleveland. Now he's in L.A. You got to pick a sport, first of all, but pick a... Pick a town. So I would prefer him to be dealing with the Cleveland Monsters in the AHL, or why not the Indians?
He's a businessman.
But what's the stake? Do we have any idea how much money he actually has? It seems like just a publicity stunt, and he's got like a
0.01% of the Boston Red Sox.
I haven't seen the stake anywhere, and I'd love to see how much he actually has in the team, because if it's just a little piece, I say, who cares?
Like, does he still root for the Yankees if he's technically a Yankee fan, even though he owns, it depends, right? If he owns 0.1% of the Red Sox,
it doesn't seem like he cares.
Right.
Business is business, I guess.
It's business. That's LeBron. He's a businessman.
Not a businessman?
He's a businessman.
But a business. There you go. We got one more. Let's go to Rob Gronkowski. He agreed to a one-year, $8 million deal to return to the Bucks, but according to Michael Silver of the NFL Network, Gronk had a similar offer on the table from his hometown, Buffalo Bills. Tim, would Gronk playing for the Bills be too much for Bills fans to handle?
Mark Miller would lose his top. Our guy Mark Miller would absolutely
lose. Oh, that was amazing.
Gronk is so Buffalo to the core. It would have been awesome to see him there, but he's staying with Brady.
Someone would die getting choke slammed through a table. I'll tell you.
That's right.
He would join Bills Mafia. Yeah. We appreciate you joining our Mafia here. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Jesse, always good to have you here.
Thanks,
we'll be back again tomorrow. That does it for today's edition of Tim and Sid. We're back tomorrow at 5 p.m. Eastern with Ken Reed and Shai Davidi as our contributors. We'll see you then. Until then, have a great night, everybody. Could you tell I missed the counts? I thought the first one was never mind.